Thank you for joining us for this episode of Journey Now, produced by Journey Church in Brentwood, Tennessee. For more information on Journey Church and our gatherings, visit journeytn.com.
Welcome to Journey Now. It's our Wednesday Roundtable Edition.
Woohoo!
I'm your host, Grant Hopperman. And for a Roundtable Edition, as you might imagine, if you're going to have a great roundtable discussion, we need interesting people sitting around our roundtable. So I want to introduce you to a couple of my friends who are sharing my table today. First, I have Kevin Dixon, a pastor at Journey.
Hey, everybody.
And I think we already met Woohoo.
I get excited Lynn. About tables. I'm already excited.
Already.
I can feel that energy. So...
Susie Lind.
As Susie sort of ruined the surprise for everybody.
Oh, sorry.
Today we're talking about what it means to share our table. And I'm going to explain more about that and why it's important to us at Journey in a minute. But first, I want to just catch up with you guys a little bit. Because both Kevin and Susie, you both spent some time away on vacation recently. And that feels like, to me, at once really foreign, the idea of vacation after a year of what we've all been through, but it's also sort of like the way the whole world is vibing now. Mm-hmm. Spring coming, warmer weather, vaccination on the rise, even services here and there without masks on or masks optional. So what was that like for you guys to actually get away in the world?
That's a good question. Still very aware of the fact that there's a pandemic. We went to Florida, which nobody in Florida realizes there's still a pandemic.
There's no COVID in Florida.
No, apparently not. But no, we went to do something where we could just relax and not be around people. And so we went to the Destin, Florida, to the beach and found ourselves still feeling the isolation of COVID to some degree.
Really?
Yeah.
But you also talked about, we were talking about yesterday,
yeah,
the idea that even in this isolated, we're sort of shut into our condo kind of thing.
Yeah, right. It was very relaxing.
That that even just the idea of food and little food rituals was a real part of your vacation.
Yes.
Did you guys going cook or did you go places to
we
eat?
We walked places to eat. We found and we sat on patios at and we went at like 5 o'clock and there was nobody there. And so we had like
I thought 5 o'clock in Florida was prime time for
I know.
Dinner.
I was thinking like
and that might be late.
We went and had pizza where they had set up a their patio in their parking lot. So we sat in the middle of this parking lot. It was about 70 degrees outside and had pizza on plastic chairs at plastic tables. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
Were there other people there as
nope,
well?
Just us.
Just the two of you watching them set up.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was so good. But yeah, it was the constant reminder of how weird it is.
How weird it is, but also like even though we're still taking precautions, you just you can feel that energy that like, it's around the corner. It might be happening. Maybe.
Yep. You can see it.
I could actually eat again in a public place mm-hmm. with other people around me.
Mm-hmm. Well, we went to North Carolina. We went to Asheville and it was interesting because we actually went to Asheville last spring break too, right as everything was shutting down. Mm. So when we went last year, everything was, including the state parks, everything was shut down.
Wow.
All the restaurants, everything. And so to go back a year later and have everything be open again was really fun. They have a statewide mask mandate there. Hmm. So, and they everybody takes it seriously. At least nobody we saw was coming up against that. Mm-hmm. So they're just, you know, keep your mask on and come in and have a good time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like you can't take your mask off at a restaurant until you're actively eating or drinking is what they say.
Okay.
Oh, like, and then you got to put it back on between bites? Or?
No, but not until the water comes to your table can you take your mask off.
Ah.
So
the water drop is the
moment. That's the moment. So, but it was really fun, and it was really fun to be away from home, outside of our normal element.
Yeah.
And
different walls to look at.
Yeah. So we ate out some, and I cooked some, and it was good.
Yeah.
And how was, I mean, you've been cooking and eating with your family at home for a year now, but how is it to sort of be out in the world of just spending that time together around a meal?
Oh, so good. So good. And I had all of my kids there, which at my kids' ages, it's, you know, they're all off doing different things all the time. And we have one that doesn't live at home anymore, but he came and he brought a friend with him, and it was just really nice to be together. And what's great too is they're all at the age now where, well, at least my two older and Garrett, Jason's friend, they're at the place in life where they're offering to help prepare the food. And so it's not just me providing a meal for everyone. It's us doing it together. And that's a lot of the meaning of it for me comes in that too.
Right, right.
So food is an activity for our family, eating, and it's
the last part of the activity.
Yeah, like people ask us, what do you guys like to do on vacation? Well, we like to eat.
Do you think after
works for me, man?
After the last year,
with you people, that's what we do too, though.
Does the way that your family interacts around a dining table and spends time, has that changed at all over the course of last year? You are already the ideal socially engaged family at every meal.
We're not the ideal socially engaged family at every meal. For sure not. That is not the case. But I think it's taken on a different meaning. We really enjoy having people join us. And so we didn't have that for a while. And then, you know, as soon as it felt safe to have a few people, we did. But I think, well, one of the things that we did when we were all quarantined was we all watched cooking shows together. Now I'm like really nerding out our family.
That's awesome.
We like to watch cooking shows together.
And are you cooking along with the show?
Well, we would cook the things that we would see. Like one of the people we really like is Sam the Cooking Guy on YouTube. So for a while, we were watching the new Sam episode every couple days that he would put them out on YouTube. And then we would make things that we would watch Sam make. And so it became an activity for us. And so our family doesn't settle for mediocre meals when we're
no
all together.
No TikTok recipes?
No, I mean, I have my share of boxed mac and cheese in the pantry and the staples of pizza and pasta, the quick things. But when we're having like Sunday dinner together, or if it's a birthday meal, or, you know, about once a week, once or twice a week, there's a meal together, and it's good. It's going to be something good. And there's going to be a variety of condiments offered, and you know,
it's robust.
And how does that, I mean, what does that look like from a social perspective around your table? I mean, how long does the conversation, I'm like idealizing in my head, because I'm thinking about this family and no one's got a screen on, everyone is sitting there, they're asking questions, we're having discussions. Is that you guys, or
well,
is
no
it...
one has a screen on, because we don't do that at the table. I mean, we definitely struggle with the screens every other time, but it's pretty much, you know, we don't have
phone
screens
down
at the table.
Phone
but we
down.
Do have to be, sometimes the conversation comes really naturally and everybody's asking questions, and sometimes
it's work.
It's, you know, you got to drive it, but the meal together has always been really important to me, and it's been something I've had to grieve, because we don't have dinner together every night.
Right.
And as kids get older, that gets harder. But like last night, we ate dinner at 8 o'clock at night, and Steve said, oh, it must be baseball season. We're having dinner at 8 o'clock at night, because Nathan had practice from 6 to 8, and that's when we ate.
That's
how
it works, right? So all this banter is sort of leading us towards what we wanted to talk about today, which is sharing our table in all kinds of ways, setting tables, sharing tables, table fellowship. Mm-hmm. And if you've been around Journey for any length of time, it's a theme that has come up again and again. Mm-hmm. So, Kevin, can you give us a little bit of the biblical grounding for table fellowship?
Yeah.
Where we see that in the Bible and why it is such an important practice for Journey people?
Sure. Sharing a meal culturally meant so much during the time of Jesus and in Jewish culture. And the people you shared a table with said something about who you are. It said that the people that sat around the table were gathered as equals. And this was a great problem that Jesus had with the Pharisees, because Jesus would eat with prostitutes and he would eat with tax collectors and he would sit at the table. And this was so scandalous. And culturally, we really don't get it, because it's not as, in America, not as culturally significant, unless you're in the mafia. But that's a different conversation for a different time. So
I did not predict we would get to the mafia today.
That's unusual.
That is, but anyway, all that to say is that theologically, there's this... First, there's a cultural picture for Jewish culture, and then there is a biblical picture of even heaven, of a grand banquet table that we're invited to and that we get to sit around and that we are sitting with God at his table. Mm-hmm. It implies an invitation into a deep relational celebration of who we are in the presence of God. And so it's not, you know, oftentimes we think of heaven as a throne room, or we think of heaven in these abstract ways where God is other and we are separate and it's a big long church service. And I know you didn't want to get into that, so we're not. But there is a sense of where when we start to see heaven in the new earth as a place where we are actually gathered around a table and a banqueting table that is prepared for us by God, it elevates this idea of what table fellowship is.
Right. Well, and I was thinking even going back, you mentioned the Jewish tradition mm-hmm. of it.
Yeah.
And this whole idea of what hospitality means mm-hmm. in Middle Eastern culture. And so you don't even have to go to tables or go to the New Testament. Mm-mm. In the Old Testament, you have things like Abraham and Sarah, right, mm-hmm. with the visitors and bring them in for the meal. So how can we even understand what that means from our perspective, where sharing a meal with someone means going to Chick-fil-A?
Wow.
That's deep.
And in the Middle East, would it be closed on Saturday?
Why are you looking at me, Grant?
Not saying anything.
Well, it is part of your culture, though.
It is. And it's so interesting when you brought up the Abraham and Sarah thing. I just had this physical response to that, because it is very much a... It's the way that you serve somebody. Mm-hmm. And it's so when someone comes to your home, how you serve them the meal actually speaks to what you think of them and how you value them.
Oh, that's great.
So this is kind of funny. When Steve first started coming to my family's house for meals when we were dating, especially as the relationship got more serious, and for sure when we got married, my family would get on me about serving him. So and we're
was he reclining
on pillows?
We're a
modern American couple, okay? We are.
Yeah, right.
We have a...
Equality was part, yes.
And so,
I'm not going to serve him.
Yeah, they would be get up and make him a plate. And I'm he can get his own plate. And they would be so, so I would comply, because I'm a good Persian daughter. And I would...
begrudgingly comply.
I would comply. Yeah. And he would just die laughing, because it wasn't what we would normally do. But But, you know, like, make sure his plate is not empty and you need to give him more and
right.
give him an abundance of food
yep.
because it shows your respect and your value for the other person. So at my wedding, my dad and I fought so much about the wedding plans and the budget and all that. I wanted to get married at 10 a.m. and have a brunch because we could save money.
Right.
I kid you not, I show up to my wedding reception and unbeknownst to me, he had hired an additional chef
wow.
and the whole dance floor was covered with this like buffet of Persian food.
At 10?
Yes. Well, it was like noon
ish.
By the time because the ceremony was at 10. But it was lunchtime and it was this huge mm-hmm. buffet and he did that. Because how he serves the guests at his daughter's wedding reflects...
So important.
It's so important to what people, how people experience mm-hmm. his respect of them and ultimately what they think and believe about him.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, when we got married, we had to change the venue because we wanted a smaller, intimate place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what we realized was that particularly Judy's parents, it was really important to them with their friends for the mm-hmm. same reason. It was a way of showing them respect and honoring them uh-huh. and honoring us. And it wasn't going to fit in the place where
right.
we were. And we were looking at it from the perspective of this is stupid and mm-hmm. it's expensive. And
you were being pragmatic.
Yeah, yeah, and completely missing the point that it's not mm-hmm. about any of that stuff.
Right.
It's about showing respect for people and honoring them and valuing mm-hmm. them.
So I find it really interesting because in our human culture, beginning in the ancient Middle Eastern culture, we look at providing a meal and a banquet. It's a lot of work and it's mm-hmm. you have to do all this to show your respect. But the invitation from God is to come taste and see and come and feast. And it's like he's preparing a banquet. He prepares this meal. He mm-hmm. invites you to a table before your enemies. Like, I mean, it's all of this like language from what God does that he's actually the one doing all this. When you think about our relationship with God, you know, a lot of times we think, well, I have to do all this for him. But then you flip it on its head when you talk about table fellowship and you think, oh, he's already done it for us. Mm-hmm. And he's inviting us not to come work and prepare and do all this stuff, but he's actually just inviting us to come mm-hmm. and be with him and feast.
Yeah. And to do that all together, Steve, mm-hmm. if you're listening.
Yes.
So it's not just about her serving you. It's about all of us serving each other, right?
Yeah. And, you know, we're coming up on Easter, and you can't miss the symbolism of that
yeah.
last night, the Last Supper,
oh.
of him gathering with his closest friends around that table and exchanging just the relational components of God preparing and sitting at a table with his closest friends on the night that he would be betrayed.
Washing their feet,
yeah.
Serving them a meal.
Right.
Knowing full well that one would betray him.
Right.
One would deny him.
Mm-hmm.
One would continue to doubt him.
Yep. And yet he had him, and it was an act of love from God. It was
yeah.
God sitting at a table with a bunch of fallen people, which gives us such a great image of table fellowship.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't well, matter what you do, you're still invited.
Yep.
And it's great the way that you said that. That's so good because you even now, how many times have we all read that story
right.
or participated in it through communion?
Yeah.
And the default idea is just to say, wow, that must have been like the world's greatest church service, right? And it wasn't. It was a meal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was people hanging out and
yep.
and being really intimate
yeah.
With each other.
Yeah. And God was the center point. God was there. That's the part that always I, you know, and they missed it. To some degree, they missed that God was there.
Right.
I mean, they, later, I'm sure when they reflected on it, there was a lot of, wow, we missed a lot of stuff.
Well, isn't that how we are too?
Yep, it is. It
we
is.
We miss it all the time. And then we look back and go, oh, see how God loved us? Dang it.
Yeah. It would have been great to feel that in the moment.
Yeah.
It would have been great, you know. And I'm sure there was some regret and shame and lament after that, mm-hmm. you know, but I'm sure also great joy.
So I want to talk before we're done here a little bit about some of the elements that go into table fellowship, because to me you sort of unpack these different parts about it. You talked about serving each other, but the whole idea in the first place of setting a table and inviting people in. Mm-hmm. Why is that? I mean, it's for sure a good human thing, it's a Christian thing, but why is that a journey thing? And how does that tie into our deepest values as a church?
Well, I think nothing makes you feel like you belong more than somebody inviting you over for dinner.
Right.
So there's a sense of invitation and personal invitation and personal relationship that, you know, as a church grows, that's one of the hardest things to hold on to is that. And so it can't be just the paid staff that sets the tables, because if a church is going to grow, if it grows wider, it will only grow deeper if everyone's participating in the serving and inviting and the feasting and all of that.
Right.
So did that answer your question?
Well, yeah. And, you know, I mean, here I am sitting talking with two people who I talk mm-hmm. with all the time. Mm-hmm. But when I think about our own practice, so Judy and I started having lots of dinners for people mm-hmm. about the time we had kids, because what we realized mm-hmm. was that we weren't going anywhere else for a while. This was going to be it for us. So if we were going to have a social life, mm-hmm. it was going to have to be at our house. We both love cooking. We love cooking with people. So inviting people over, but what we quickly realized was that part of the value of that was not just having the three people over that are your best friends,
right?
But maybe even inviting people that you don't know and you're not even sure you like. And some of that dynamic, having people from different political views, mm-hmm. people who were not of our faith, people who are just from the neighborhood or kids' parents or whatever. I mean, those are some great mm-hmm. times that we had, and it came from that setting the table. And then the other thing I was thinking about was just the idea of, you mentioned serving people, but the idea of sacrifice and mm-hmm. generosity mm-hmm. that goes into table fellowship.
Yeah, it's broader than merely sharing a meal. I think sometimes we think, yeah, it's going to Chick-fil-A, right? I'll buy this time. Oh, great sacrifice. But in the sense of the word of I think true table fellowship is there's a culture around the table that is set. There is a openness. There is an equality of all that sit around the table. And the hospitality of the hostess, of the giver of the banquet is to make people feel comfortable, make people feel welcomed, encourage them to share who they are with those at the banquet, at the table, at the meal. And it allows for an intimate setting that you can't get in other places. It allows for conversation that flows naturally if you're poised and you're ready for that conversation. There are moments when tables can be a place of conflict as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm thinking, I got one more story, which when I was thinking about this, one of my favorite meals that I ever was a part of, Judy and I didn't actually eat. We had some friends that the wife in the family was one of my older son's teachers, and got to know their family. They were really great people, but she was terrified of cooking. Mm. And it was this huge source of stress for her. Mm. And so they would come over to our house a few times, and we would make meals, and we would have them cook with us. And that was stressful because she was afraid she was going to screw it up. Yeah. And the biggest day of stress for her was Thanksgiving. Because, oh my gosh, my whole family's there. And it was like just this American thing of it becomes another source of,
Of anxiety.
Potential anxiety. And so Judy had the idea. She's like, hey, why don't you just invite your family over to your house?
And you guys go over
and cook for you.
That's amazing.
And it was...
That's so fun.
I want to be really careful not to like put a halo on myself around this, but it was like the most fun thing.
Yeah.
Because we completely bought into the idea. We had like our little chef coats.
Nice.
That we wore.
Yes.
And we made table cards for all the guests. Aww. And we did the whole, we brought our good china. And what ended up happening was her family was able to just sit there and relax and enjoy each other for like a couple of hours, which I don't think ever happened before at their Thanksgiving table. And I think I came away from that experience more nourished than any of them did.
Yeah.
Because
did they give you a tip at the end?
Nope. And in fact,
nope.
We took all of the dishes and boxed them up and took them home to wash them. Because it's like, if I'm here, you're going to want to participate in that. And that's not what tonight's about.
Yeah.
Right? Smart.
So maybe Susie, you can talk a little bit about, because we said we're right at the beginning of this whole time where things maybe kind of sort of in the future will be a little bit opening up.
Yeah, we're seeing a light at the end of the tunnel.
Don't even say that yet.
Too soon?
I want to make sure. I want to make sure before I buy into that.
You got your first shot, man.
So this is something that in addition to sharing corporate table in church, communion together, that we really want to encourage everyone to begin doing with other people from their village group, small group, whatever it's called group, with their neighbors, reaching out to people that they don't know. So how is this going to look going forward? I know you don't know all of it yet, but what's your vision for how this can become a really meaningful practice at Journey as we start being able to spend more time together?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things the pandemic taught us is how much we need to be around tables with each other, and how, I mean, I think a lot of us miss that. I think your daughter actually posted a picture on
She's
Instagram
pointing at Kevin.
Yesterday about... showing a meal that she shared with some people last year, and how much she misses that feeling of being with people around a meal. And so I don't know exactly how it's going to look, because time will tell. I mean, I feel like there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and we joked about that being too soon. And I think that does feel too soon for some people. So we know that people are still hesitant to be with other people and for various reasons that are legitimate. So as we slowly, re-engage and feel safe, I think the best way is to just re-engage relationally. And we're hoping in the next year to create some avenues for our people at Journey to re-enter into relationship with each other, with people that we know and people that we don't know yet, because we have a lot of new people coming to Journey now.
Yep.
And just creating ways for people to just be together and share a meal and hear each other's stories and get to know each other. And then out of that might come some more I guess.
Relationships.
More intentional relationships that help.
It's great because instead of trying to answer mm-hmm. those awkward questions about what kind of tree you would be or whatever that icebreaker question would be, it's such a natural thing to be around a table with people.
Yeah. And I think one of the gifts of the pandemic has been, one, the awareness of how much we need people, and then also the way in which we need people. And so, you know, I heard from a lot of people how much it meant to them when their friends would check on them, when people would check on them or drop off a meal or send a card. And those things that we've kind of forsaken over the last decade, maybe, mm-hmm. have kind of come into a place of new and rich meaning. And also, we've learned we actually want the people that we spend time with, like, we want it to count, because we've had to be choosy and we've had to be limited. And so I think there's something that's, I think, being birthed out of that, that could be really refreshing.
Yeah. We've talked a lot about how to, and how to make connecting points here mm-hmm. at Journey at the building. So we've talked about, how to maybe take the patio and transform that into a place where people can actually connect and meet, and make the lobby more friendly, and maybe have food trucks here on a Sunday, and taking steps that allow for people to go, hey, I can hang around, I can get something to eat, we can sit at a table, mm-hmm. We can sit outside, it's safer outside or whatever, but to create an environment that says, we want you to stay rather than go, and we would love for you to sit around tables and have a conversation.
Which is great, because there was a time when we had the conversation, we want you to go.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come here and then leave as soon as possible afterwards.
Right.
And that really is not what a community should be like.
It doesn't feel like what it's supposed to be.
It's not.
You know?
Yeah.
It's the best we could do. But.
Right. Yeah. But it was a struggle to connect and talk with people. Even before, you know, the building was done, we had this tiny little building and there was no room in the lobby, and we need your parking spot. Go get in your car and get out. You know, we won't need to do that anymore. We have parking spots. We have room to roam. We have,
So that's why the Puckett's breakfast sandwiches that you guys used to have, those were to go.
Right.
Wrap to go.
And then the pandemic just
ruined everything.
It did. It ruined it.
I don't know if I would say that, because
no,
I think
I wouldn't.
From
say
what
it
you were saying, Susie, I think really our challenge now is to take some of the richness, the interpersonal richness that came from enforced engagement with those people around us, and hang on to that, and not just go back to Chick-fil-A. I mean, nothing wrong with Chick-fil-A, but not just go back to our old way of living.
Mm-hmm. I think we'll see it eventually as a holy disruption. And like what we talked about.
It's going to take me a while to get there.
Exactly. But what we talked about earlier with the people who missed Jesus being with them.
Right.
You know, that's going to be us. Like we're going to.
Yeah.
I'm still convinced we're going to look back on this and think, wow, look at what God did.
Yeah.
Look at what he showed us.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have learned that had we not had that holy disruption.
And gone through what we've gone through. And this year, this last 18 months has been a testifier. It really has.
Yeah.
But the good news is,
we're 18 months into it.
We're going to be, we're all eating starting now. Mm-hmm. So let's get together and make some stuff and eat it. And when we Instagram it, we're not going to Instagram the food. We're going to Instagram the people that
we're
with. How about that?
Yeah.
So that is it for this week's roundtable. I hope you guys were all nourished by that. Thanks to Kevin and Susie. And as always, thanks to you for sharing our table every week. And speaking of sharing, if you like Journey Now, why don't you screenshot this episode and share it to your Instagram stories? Like us, share us on your favorite platform, do all the things. And you can even text us your questions and comments at 615-861-9503. That's in the show notes if you need to look it up. We'll see you again next Wednesday on another Journey Now Roundtable. Until then, see you later. We're hungry.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoy the Journey Now podcast, please take a moment to leave a rating or review and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.